Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the Private Officer Talk Radio Network Show. I'm your host, founder and CEO of Private Officer International, a security police association based in Atlanta, Georgia, USA. My name is Rick McCann, and I'm glad to be here with you tonight. Want to give you a little heads up in case something happens and everything goes quiet, and all of a sudden there's no one on the radio. It's because we're having a severe line of storms moving through the area. One of the downfalls to having an internet program is you never know what's going to happen during a stormy situation or a loss of power or internet. So if we get disconnected, if everything goes quiet, I'm not bored with the show and I didn't hang up on you on purpose, but we will reconnect. From time to time, we do have technical difficulties. At any rate, we're glad that you're here joining us on this June the 2nd, 2010. Can you believe it? Can you really believe it? June already? What happened to this year? Almost half of the year is over. I was thinking yesterday, June 1st, where was I just last month? 6 months out of the calendar gone. I know I've been busy. I know we have a busy life, but my goodness, time flies when you're having fun or otherwise. They tell me that the older that you get, the quicker time goes by. When I was 20, I thought 50 years old was a forever away. Now that I've reached that point and beyond, it's hard to imagine that I've lived so long. I'm not exactly ancient, don't get me wrong, but time really does fly. But I guess I'll save that for a different type of show. Tonight, we're really excited because we've got a great show or program lined up for you. I never know if I should call it a show or a program or just what, but we've got a great program lined up tonight. We're very excited. We've got a couple of experienced highly experienced, trained guest on the show. One of my friends from Nashville, Tennessee, will be joining us shortly, and another expert down in the Dallas, Texas area. We're going to be talking tonight about evaluating the threat. This is extremely important training. If you are listening tonight, hurry up and call your coworkers, your buddies who work in law enforcement or security and have them join us, because this is going to be a extended program tonight, extremely valuable training by experienced trainers who normally would charge you thousands of dollars. But tonight, you're going to get it absolutely free. We'll be introducing them in just a short time here when we get to our next segment. We will also open up the lines so that we will take your questions. If you'll just hold off, the phones are already ringing, so that's a good sign. We like that. But if you'll hold off for about another 3 minutes and let me get through our segment here and introduce our guest, we will have them talk a few moments and we will have questions from our radio audience in the next segment, about 30 minutes from now. We do want to remind you of a couple of things here on this Wednesday night. First of all, let me thank the great number of you who have been renewing your association membership. We're extremely thankful of your support, appreciative of your response, and we hope that we are contributing to you and supporting you in the ways that you need us to. And if we're not, We are all ears. We want you to tell us what service, what benefit, what extra that you'd like to see as a membership benefit, and if we can do it financially, we will do it. But we're very happy and thankful tonight to the many of you in the last few days who have been renewing. We are currently, June is our big push on renewals of memberships, and so if you haven't received an email advising you that your membership dues are up, you will. And if you have, and you haven't gotten around to making that payment, please do so, because it's extremely important that we can be financed to do all of the things that we're doing, and we are doing a great number. Also, before we get into the training aspect of this program, I do want to remind you that if you have thought about becoming an area chapter manager, or if you've mentioned to us that you're interested and you have not filled out that short application, please do so ASAP. We really need for you to send it back, and we're going to be launching the chapters this month, whether it be 1 or 100. It makes no difference to us. We're not going to hold off a moment more. We will be getting these chapters launched. It is a great urgency, and there is great importance for us to be able to have the chapters up and running. In fact, just this week, there was a situation that we really could have used the assistance of the chapter members and manager to assist with this situation, but unfortunately, there was none. So if you have any interest in being a chapter manager, or you just want to become involved in your local chapter, please send us an email at adminassist@privateofficer.com. Also, if you'd like to send us any type of message while we're online, while we're here on the radio program, certainly you can do that. Send it to radio@privateofficer.com, radio@privateofficer.com. If you'd like to announce maybe some training going on in your area, maybe you're recruiting, maybe you're hiring, maybe you've got a promotion or some major announcement that you'd like to share with our listeners, and we have a great number of listeners here in the U.S. and around the world, please just send us an email at radio@privateofficer.com, and we will, free of charge, no cost to you, as a service, whether you are an association member or not, we will make that message known. You can't get cheaper than free, folks. You can't get advertising anyplace for free. If you can, let me know, because we're doing a whole bunch of advertising that's costing us a bunch of money, and we'd love to do some free advertising. But as a service to you, just send us an email at radio@privateofficer.com, and we will broadcast that information free of charge. Someone just emailed and asked me to go over the goals and the reasons for the chapters again. Scott says, I understand, but some listeners don't get it. Okay, no problem, Scott. Chapters are being opened in many areas across the country and around the world. Much like any organization, the Lions Club, you know, the various speakers clubs, you know, ASIS, and the various organizations and associations that have local chapters. And there are six goals. And you might want to write this down, and that way you can share it with other people who ask you. Six goals or reasons, you know, why we're opening and what we hope to accomplish. First of all, our main goal is training association members and other security personnel in the area, whether they are or are not members of the association. Both contractual and proprietary security officers. Every month, there will be some form of training involved, whether it be a 15-minute PowerPoint that you're going to watch, whether it be a webcast, whether it be an interactive training done there, whether it be a podcast that you listen to, or it may be a Skype training where you're actually live, online, video conferencing, doing training. Training is an extremely important aspect to our business, to our job. As a private security or law enforcement officer, private police officer, loss prevention agent, you know that if you don't have the proper skills, you can't do the job properly. That's why every few weeks, 5 or 6 weeks, we talk about the use of force. We talk about the threat of force and the elevation, because that's a very key aspect of our daily jobs. It's also that area of our job that can really get us in serious trouble. Just this week, another security officer has been arrested in a shooting, and we're going to be talking about that coming up in the next segment. So our number one goal of the chapter is training. Number two, networking. What does that mean? What is networking? Networking is a lot more than just having lunch or coffee with someone. It's a lot more than just saying, okay, we're all here together. Networking involves working together, building a team for a common goal. You might want to write that down. The chapter networking is getting it together here for a common goal. Number three, recruitment. We have to continue to, of course, add new members to our association. Recruitment is important in any organization, any association, and that will be a key function of the chapter. Number four, we have a lot of security officers injured, a lot more than you probably realize. We have a lot of officers who are killed in the line of duty. Thankfully, none last month, none during the month of May that we have recorded, that we became aware of, and we monitor, as I've said many times, over 300 news media outlets. We will do another research through the month to make sure that we didn't miss anyone, but right now it looks like zero. But there are a lot of security officers, between 60 and 80 routinely killed each year, thousands injured. So the benevolent part of what we do will be extended to the chapter members and the chapter manager. Being right there in the community, you'll be able to respond immediately and assist those officers. Number five, we want to become community involved, whether that be after a storm, whether that be during a crisis, whether that be part of the CERT team, the Civilian Emergency Response Team in your community, which is through federal government. We have become involved, and we're going to find other ways to be involved. And number six, we're going to participate in reviewing certain laws that may come up for change or that may be added to your local statutes, municipal codes that may affect private security. We're going to become activists, if you would, in certain areas. The chapters will meet once a month. The area chapter manager, or as we call them, the ACMs, will probably have about 2 to 4 hours a month dedicated here. That's all. It's not time-consuming. It's not time-constrained. It's not going to interfere with their full-time job or your full-time job as a member. We're going to assist with training. We're going to assist with every aspect of the chapter. So the ACM will not be out there an island all alone. We're going to be there. The chapter is extremely important for us so that we get more recognized in the area, so that we get the word out, so that people know about us more than they do. And we already do a lot of networking. We already have a lot of different resources where we are networking, where we're advertising, so on and so forth. But this is going to really put it in the community. And there are certain areas that have a larger concentration of private security officers, and we really want to focus on those areas. So, Scott, I hope that has explained the information better. I hope that I've done a good job for you. I hope that that helps those that might be listening that may not have understood it previously. But it's important. It really is. It's important to have these chapters out there. Couple of other very quick notes here. First of all, we are going to be offering some free training. We've got a number of companies signed up. Our first leg of the training will be Tennessee, Georgia, Mississippi, South and North Carolina, Texas, Colorado, Texas, Kentucky, and Florida. If you're in any of those states, we will offer training, a 6 to 8 hour module of training free of charge to your company, your business, or your church specific to your needs. Additional days or training will be at a very discounted rate. We will be networking and recruiting, and the only thing that we ask of you is to provide us the facility, the room, and the staff or the people that you'd like for us to train, and we will schedule you in. Send us an email at trainingdivision@privateofficer.com. trainingdivision@privateofficer.com. Just got an email from Stan. Stan is notifying us of a security officer injury in Colorado. Colorado Springs, serious injury of a security officer this morning. And he's going to send us a news link, and we're going to follow up on that shortly and see what that involves. But getting back to the training, if you are a supervisor, manager, a company, an owner, a church security team, we'd be happy to come in and assist you with your training. There is no gimmick, there's no catch, there's no cost. This is just like a store giving away 2-for-1 or discounts or a coupon for a free sandwich. It's all part of marketing, and we will be doing some recruiting and some networking there. So bring in other companies. We've got a company, in fact, I think we've got several, who have invited other similar companies in the area to join them in their facility for the training, which I think that's great. That's what networking is all about. So if you have a security business or a church security team, by all means, invite the other neighborhood businesses that have security staffs in, and we'll train them all at the same time and hopefully recruit them to be members of the association. We've been telling you for a number of weeks now that we have a great online convention and expo coming up this month. This month, But this month, we've got a great, fantastic convention, just like if you'd gone here to Atlanta or Nashville or Denver or Las Vegas, where they have tons of conventions. You can go to the convention. You can go to the seminars. You can go to the interactive training. You can take part in the giveaways and the contest. You can even go to the vendor floor and buy something if you want to. This is going to be all online, interactive, coming up toward the end of this month. And we're going to be telling you more about that in the upcoming week or so. But it's really cool. It's innovative. And we're looking forward to it. This is going to be the first ever online convention and expo 2010. And just keep looking for more information about that. We do expect a large participation. It will also be, I believe, saved for you to go to after the event is over. So it's a pretty cool thing. We are considering moving our forums. If you are a member of PrivateOfficer.Ning, which is our forums, we've been notified by the Ning company that they are no longer going to have free sites. They are charging. We looked at their fee schedule for us to have all the apps on there that we do. We have videos, we have chat, we have about 150 apps. It would be somewhat expensive for us. We want to hear from you. Do you like that particular format? Are you a member of the forums? Do you think it's a worthwhile benefit for you? Do you use it? Do you get anything out of it? Because if not, we'll just scrap the whole thing. We are looking at either moving it to another free website or possibly building it on our main PrivateOfficer.com website or doing something else with it. We'd like to hear from you, our associates, friends, and members. Send us an email at adminassist@PrivateOfficer.com or go to the PrivateOfficer.Ning site and you can leave your comment there on the forum. We do have a lot of members from around the country and around the world. They seem to enjoy it. We have a lot more that jump on every day or so and read the forum and not really comment, not really participate too much. We have a lot of hits on the website. So we know that it is active, but unfortunately, we're kind of at a crossroads to decide what to do with this. And so we'd love for your input. We'd love for your advice, and we thank you ahead of the time. We have initiated today the iTunes. This was a suggestion to us. We had looked at this before. Someone mentioned to us that they would love to take this news program, this radio program with them when they go jogging, when they work out at the gym, where they go to work. But the format presently does not allow for them to download it or record it. So we have initiated an iTunes account. We are going to be downloading our news and radio programs along with some training and other podcasts to the iTunes so that you can download it to your MP3 player or whatever, and it's much more portable. It will be very inexpensive. I don't know the cost. I believe it's going to be 50 cents or 99 cents. It'll be inexpensive, and I hope that you know, doing this will help you. Making it portable will assist you to hear it when it's convenient for you. That will be made available probably within the next few days. Definitely by Monday of next week, because we've already got that set up. We're also going to have our own streaming TV program. That's in the works. We hope to have that up and running in the next few weeks as well. Very quickly, we told you a few weeks ago we have a brand new benefit for our members. I'd like to review this one more time. It's a program called Back to Work, and it's a resume review. We have a HR company who will review and critique and assist you in writing your resume. We also have some interviewing techniques and other assistance available for you free of charge. We've also teamed up with two online employment centers now who will assist you in locating work in the security field or other industry in your area. If you're a member, this will be made available to you. So if you need that assistance, just let us know. September 19th through the 25th, 2010, is going to be our second annual Private Officer Memorial Week. As you know, last year we did a number of events. This year we're going to have even more events, numerous live ceremonies, and we will be sending out more information. You can also go to our website at privateofficer.com. There is a press release there. You can get involved by spreading the word. You can also contact your local mayor, the governor, and have them write a proclamation for the Private Security Officer Memorial Week. A proclamation is just a recognition of the week, and it has their official stamp and their official signature. And have them do that, send it to us, and we will send that out in a press release. You can get involved in organizing a ceremony. It doesn't have to be an hour or two. It can just be a few minutes. But it's important for us to take just a few moments of our time to recognize the security officers who have been killed in the line of duty. For more information, you can send us an email at adminassist@privateofficer.com. Adminassist@privateofficer.com. One last note, we do still have a little bit of time left on our Best Dressed Officer Best Looking Patrol Vehicle Contest. You're going to want to get involved. That's my drum roll. We have a great contest going. We've got several close ties, several people that are really neck and neck to be the winner. We have a first and second place. If you're a uniform officer, send us a picture and an entry to adminassist@privateofficer.com. First prize is going to win a $100 gift package. The second place winner will win a $50 gift package. Next year is going to be even bigger and better. We're also going to send out a press release to your area media, if you want us to, announcing that you are the winner. You can also be an instant author if you'd like to contribute to our Security in Motion book, which is going to be published this year, hopefully in the fall. You can send us a 200-plus word incident that you've been involved in, whether it was something dangerous, funny, ridiculous, stupid, whatever it might be, and we will edit it down into an article for the news, for the book, Security in Motion. All of the proceeds are going to directly to the Private Officer Benevolent Fund. You'll get credit. Your name is going to be right there on that article, right there on that piece that you send in, which is pretty cool because, you know, there's quite a few people that are sending in all kinds of stuff. It's pretty amazing, actually. And we're going to have a professional company put together the book, and I think it's going to be pretty cool when it all gets done. If you'd like more information, send us an email at privateofficer.com, adminassist@privateofficer.com. Okay. That's all I got to say about that now. Show's over. Time for me to go have some ice cream or something. No, I'm joking. Tonight's show is very important. Now, the program tonight is very important because we're going to be talking about how to evaluate the threat. And there are different levels of force, and it's important. I realize that sometimes it's extremely hard to recognize the threat. Should you shoot? Don't shoot. Should you flee? Should you fight? We're going to be talking about that. Right now, we're going to take a caller. Good evening, caller. You're on Officer Talk Radio. How can I help you? Hello? Well, they did want to be on the radio because they were on hold for quite some time, but I guess they decided against it. It's not easy, and we don't want to play Monday morning quarterback. That's not what this program is going to be about. We realize, because we've been in the situations a number of times, that these situations arise you know, in a heartbeat. There you are. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. You're on patrol. You see someone. You confront them. All of a sudden, they pull a weapon. What level of force do you need to use? Good evening. You're on Private Officer Talk Radio. Well, we either have another problem or callers are hanging up. But what level of force do you use? It's a split-second decision. It's not easy. It was never meant to be easy. This job is as dangerous as they come, as dangerous as any law enforcement position out there. The more that private security officers are proactive, the more their responsibilities cross the lines of law enforcement, the greater the frequency of having these type of problems. Good evening, Private Officer Talk Radio. Private Officer Talk Radio. We're having a problem again, I guess, with our some technical problems here. The more that the security officers involved in law enforcement type duties, the greater the chance that they're going to be involved in use of force situations. It's inevitable. Good evening, you're on Talk Radio.
I was trying to get a hold of Rick.
Yes, sir. How are you doing tonight?
Fine, Rick. This should be for tune.
I know it is. How's the weather there? We're having some storms here.
Well, so far so good. We had a storm went through and just barely missed us, but it looks pretty good. We're trying to send it down your way.
You can keep it. Thanks for calling in. I was just telling my listeners that there's going to be a lot more times when private security officers are faced with the situation of having to evaluate the use of force as security officers become more proactive and are involved in more confrontations, having to confront trespassers and people like that. Let me first kind of officially introduce you so that our listeners know a little bit about you. Buford Toon is a retired Metro Nashville police officer, 30 years. His resume weighs about 20 pounds, bigger than mine. He is the owner of Academy of Personal Protection and Security in Nashville, Tennessee, where he instructs law enforcement and security personnel. He has been involved in every aspect of law enforcement and private security that you can imagine. He is just a well-rounded, experienced, trained person. It would take me all night to go through all of his credentials. But thanks for calling in, and I'm glad that you're here, Buford.
Well, thank you for asking me. What a pleasure to be here.
We have definitely an increase from what we've seen security officers using force. Now, you know, as a police officer there in Nashville, I'm sure that you had many occasions of interacting with private security. Some good, some bad.
Correct.
We'll save the bad part for another show, but, you know, in your years, and I'm, you know, maybe not so much 20 years ago, but in the last 5 years or 10 years you were on the force, did you see more of an increase of security officers being involved in confrontations and the use of force and that kind of thing?
Well, yes and no. I mean, it was a lot more involvement with security because more people were hiring security and getting security companies to come in and do the jobs because there just was not enough law enforcement officers to go around. But since I've retired in the last probably 5 years, I have seen a big increase in security officers involved in use of force. And it comes back to the simple thing that security officers have got to realize that the training of all types is one of the biggest and the most important thing that's going to be questioned in a court of law. And one thing that I try to drill in all of our students' head is if these punks on the street will attack an armed, trained police officer, knowing the training, the background, and everything that they've got, what are they going to do to the security officer out there that they know has got minimal or sometimes, in a lot of cases, no training?
Right. Right. If they have no respect for police, they definitely have no respect for security. There are basically three types of threat. And correct me if I'm wrong, but there are three types of threat. There is imminent threat. That's a threat that is right there in front of your face. Someone's got a gun pointed to you, a knife. There is definite bodily harm coming to you immediately if you don't take action. That's imminent. There is perceived threat. There's perceived threat. You perceive that the person looks like he may do bodily harm, he may assault you, he may attack you, or he may be a hoodlum carrying a weapon. That's perceived. You've got that in your mind either because you've sized him up that way or just your mind has pictured that suspect or that person and you've got a perceived threat. There's also a probable threat. The probable threat is you're involved in a heightened situation, maybe a volatile situation, a violent situation. You haven't been attacked yet. There's been no weapons shown, but there is a probable threat. You have reason to believe that some threat does exist. Am I correct in these three assessments?
Yes, sir. Right on the button. And in the biggest thing on the probable threat in this day and time that people have to realize that if there's a reason for you, me, or anyone to hire security to patrol our properties, there's a probable threat existing, or why would we need security there?
Exactly, exactly. In assessment, you know, a lot of security officers and sometimes law enforcement, when you're on a situation, whether it be you've responded to a domestic, you've responded to a disturbance, or you've stopped someone at 3 o'clock in the morning in an apartment complex, there is always going to be some level of threat. That's considered probable threat, okay?
Correct.
But the problem that we have, especially with private security personnel, is sometimes they jump the gun. And that's due to a lack of training, a lack of oversight by their company. And just again this week, as I was discussing yesterday with you, we've had now 71 security officers arrested since January 1st. 18 have been arrested for aggravated assault or murder just in the last week. Two more security officers arrested for murder. The use of force was excessive, and
right.
You know, without disclosing the case that you and I talked about yesterday that happened in your area, do you want to talk a little bit about what that security officer feeling and thinking and why he used the level of force that he used?
Yeah, we can. The one of the things that I like to bring up before I get into that is I can't remember which program it was on, but it was one of the morning news programs that comes on. They had an assessment going, and they were talking about people being able to survive in the Tennessee area, mainly what they were speaking of, and for a person in the Tennessee area to be able to feed a family and survive, they should be making a minimum of $10 an hour to be able to stay out of the welfare and off of food stamps. And this is one of the problems we perceive is with the companies that go out and do the low bid contracts and then hire a body that's breathing and put them in a uniform without proper training or tactics or techniques or tools to do the job. This is what's bringing the bad name down on security in the country. Now, the incident that happened here in Nashville,
Let me interrupt you 1 second. One of the things, Buford, and I agree with you because, you know, I've owned a security company. I've had to do it myself. It's all about getting the contract, and sometimes you have to underbid. I was speaking with a company out of Virginia yesterday. They are in a metropolitan area, and I won't tell you who it was, but the security company in their area have banded together in the last year or two, and they have minimal quotes that they'll give for unarmed and armed. Now, they can go between X amount and X amount, but they're not going to go lower. And in doing that, they've been able to because, as you know, security is a high turnover business.
Right.
And so if the security companies would band together and somewhat agree that we have minimal standards, minimal pay that we're going to accept, that would help out the industry.
Well, I agree 100%. The problem is with that, they have to be real, real careful about maybe overstepping their bounds into the price fixing stuff, so forth. But if they've got it in the agreement with everyone that everyone stays within these boundaries, that's fine. And that's what needs to be done. The problem is you're always going to have the low ballers that's going to come in, and the only way to get rid of these people is for the good companies in every state in the country. They're going to have to step up to bat, and they're going to have to be the ones to realize we've got to do something about this ourselves. We can't wait for the feds or the local government or anybody to step in. We've got to do it just like you were talking about these companies did. And getting the companies together so they're not acting like a bunch of school kids in a classroom wanting to fight over who's got the biggest pencil is the problem. And as soon as these companies can realize that if we all work together, we can solve the problem. But, if that happens, I'd love to see it, but it's doubtful.
Yeah, it'd be a miracle. All right, let me set up this incident that we were talking about, and you can correct me after I set this up, but there was an incident about a year and a half ago, I guess now, in Nashville, where a security officer was working in a shopping center near a club restaurant, and there was an intoxicated person who got behind the wheel. And there was an altercation of sorts. The security officer tried to stop the man from leaving. He assaulted the security officer with his vehicle several times. The security officer opened fire. The man was killed, and unfortunately, the security officer is now in prison.
That's correct.
Now,
pretty much hitting a roundabout.
Yeah, in this situation, obviously the media didn't tell the whole story. They never do. But in this situation, there was perceived threat, probably not imminent at the time, but it was perceived because the vehicle is a weapon, as we know. And the security officer made the decision to confront the intoxicated driver and to stop him from leaving and possibly injuring somebody else or killing someone else. And unfortunately, one thing led to the other and shots were fired. Now, do you think that there was any other way around this? Do you think that the security officer could have used a different level of force or could have, as private security officers, as you know, we can either fight or flight. We can either, get involved or we can flee. Unlike law enforcement, who has a duty to continue pursuit, we can back off at any time.
Correct. Well, you've got different situations here. The thing we have to look at is in the situation that this officer was in, I cannot see after it escalated to where it went any other use of force than what he actually did.
Right.
As you said, the true story was not given by the news media, and the true story was not even given by the police department. There was a lot more to it. To give you an example, the witnesses that were interviewed by the police department stated that the officer was standing 20 feet away from the car when he fired. The evidence was proven in court that at the angle of the bullet that entered the body, that the officer had to be standing right next to him when he fired, as the officer stated. And the expert that they brought in on that was quite amazing, the way he sat there and did it. I thought I was sitting on a set of numbers on TV when they brought this guy in. But basically, he stated that if the officer was that far away, he'd have to be 26 feet tall to make the bullet enter at the angle that it did. So based upon the evidence that was there, the only thing that the officer could have done that would probably have been any different to maybe change the outcome of the situation is once he saw the guy was drinking, told him to leave, and then walked away from the car. But then again, you've got the liability there that if you know that there's a violation, especially in the state of Tennessee, you have that in the state law that says you're there to protect persons and property and enforce rules and regulations and local and state laws.
Right.
He could have stepped away. The other part of the story was not only was the guy drinking, but he was running some lines of cocaine when he walked up to the car. And the autopsy showed he had three different drugs plus alcohol in his system. So if the officer had turned him loose and he had got on the street and he had killed somebody or injured somebody, then the first thing the family's going to do is going to raise teetotal hell and say, well, why didn't you stop him?
Yeah.
You were there, you saw the problem. So it's a catch-22, and you've got to realize it.
They probably would have sued the security company, you know, at that point for not doing their job, you know?
Right, exactly. Well, that was the other problem. The security company was in violation of several laws, and they turned around and dumped on the security officer and walked off and left him.
Yeah. Par for the course. Let me ask you, you know, as a law enforcement officer, I know that you were involved in a lot of situations where there were either imminent or perceived threat. You know, when you got on scene, you had to assess the situation, and people don't realize even in the officer-involved shootings, they don't realize how quickly things happen. You've got to make split-second decisions just like that. And it's not like you've got all day. You don't have to go back. You don't have time to go back and look at a book. You can't call your supervisor and ask, well, what do you think I should do in this situation? It's instantaneously. How can a security officer better evaluate and size up the situation, you know, and know what level of force to use or when to possibly back off completely? What's your suggestion on that?
Well, they need to take it upon themselves and quit depending on the companies and their minimal training that the state requires, and they need to take it upon themselves to go out and seek the proper training and train every day with this type of situations as though it may be your last day on earth. And that's what you have to do, is you have to get it into your head that the training is just not there to get your card or get your certification so that you can go out and go to work. It's there to keep you alive, and that's the reason law enforcement trains as hard as they do. And look what happens. Law enforcement still get involved in situations. They still get hurt. They still get killed. They still get sued. So the security officers have got to realize you've got to take it upon yourself. You've got to get up off your good intentions. And sure, it's going to cost you some money, but is the money that you spend to stay out of prison or to stay out of civil court worth the time that you're going to be putting into it versus You look at your family. We tell everybody every day, look in the mirror and put a value on what you see, and then tell me what you would spend to protect it. And if that's not good enough, hold up your family's picture, look at that, and then tell me what you would spend to protect it and be able to stay and see that family every day at the end of your shift. So the answer, again, it comes back every single time to nothing but training, knowing your rights, knowing what you can do, and knowing when to get and when to go and when to step in and when it's time. He says, I told a guy the other day, you know, a lot of times it was a lot simpler sometimes to have a female partner than it was a male partner, because the female partners in most cases did not have to prove how tough they were like some of the males did.
Yeah.
And the woman knew when it was time to go.
Yeah, that's true. That, you know, they're more apt to walk away from a confrontation and calmly just let it go, you know. In the, you know, the shootings that have occurred in the last few months, and I'm sure in Nashville it's the same, it's been either nightclubs or apartments. Is that pretty much
right,
the same in Nashville?
Pretty much, yes. Nightclubs is probably, I'm going to say, if it's not number one, it's pushing right up there. And then you have apartment complexes is number two. And every time we see one of these that's involved, it's always they have minimal security. The people that are there don't have the proper equipment or no equipment, like we see in some clubs, where they're strictly 1,000% unarmed. All they've got is their hands and their brains. And it just, I just don't understand why anybody would want to go in and take a security job knowing they have nothing to protect themselves with. And I don't understand why anybody would want to hire security and put them in a place and not give them something to protect themselves.
Let me grab this call real quick. Caller, you're on Private Officer Talk Radio. How can we help you tonight? Hello? Well, I think they're on mute or something because I picked up a phone a few times and they're not there. But, okay. In the last 6 years that we've tracked security officer deaths, Buford, you might like to know this. The number one deadliest location where most security officers are killed are the nightclubs.
Yep.
Number two has been armored cars. And apartments have been number three every year.
That does not surprise me.
Very dangerous. Most people don't really understand that in the law there are only two types of force. You're either going to use one or the other. There really is no in-between. Lethal and non-lethal force.
Correct.
And if you would just kind of explain that, the difference, I've explained it 1,000 times, but from a different perspective, maybe you, lethal obviously is deadly force, and non-lethal is anything less than deadly, but
right.
Sometimes hard to know, you know, what to do. Now, there are situations where there is no weapons involved that you could still use lethal force, especially if the aggressor is much larger than you or is trying to take your weapon, correct?
Correct. Correct. You've got situations. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead, Buford.
Well, the thing that we have to make people understand is deadly force could be simply anything. We had a security officer that came to me, and he got terminated because they said he was over-aggressively and using too much force on a person. Well, after he explained the situation to me, and I'm going, well, you know, you got a little borderline thing here. It was a nightclub. It was a bar. They had a gentleman in there who had too much to drink, and this officer, instead of trying to talk to him, which, you know, yourself, it's hard to talk to a drunk, he walks up, and the first thing he does is grab the guy and start manhandling. Well, you know, people have got to understand, when you get two male egos involved in a situation in a room full of, especially women standing around watching, you know, we're going to protect ourselves. We're not going to get ourselves beat down. And the next thing that happened was the drunk started to fight back. Well, the security officer at that time started escalating, and he grabbed the guy by the back of the head and run his head through the boardwalk. and busted the drywall down and everything else. Well, they fired him. Well, I had to explain to him that deadly force can come in any manner. Yeah, when you grab somebody by the head and run their head into the wall, if the person had died, that would have been deadly force that was used, and you're going to have to justify the authorization to use that deadly force in the manner that you did. If the person dies, it's the same as pulling the gun and shooting them, no matter what kind of force it is. This is the reason that we try to make the people understand that putting security officers into a situation where they have no tools in their toolbox of self-defense is completely stupid. This day and time, I can tell you, I'm a lot older and wiser than I used to be. And back in when my day was when I was on the street, yeah, there was plenty of times that I went up and grabbed people. And after it was over, you kind of stand there and going, why in the devil did you just do what you just did? You know, that was stupid and that was dangerous. And this day and time, it's not like it was then. People will pull knives. They will hit you with anything. And we have all kinds of tools. We have pepper spray. We have batons. We have, God, I love the taser. It's out there. It's the best tool that's been around in a long time. And the security officers need to learn to use these tools instead of quit using their hands and realize that any amount of force, no matter what you do, when you call it non-lethal, it can go lethal in the blink of an eye.
Yeah, it sure can. I'm glad you brought up the taser. That is something that you teach at your school, isn't it?
That is correct, and I think it's the best tool that's ever come along, and if I had my way about it, every police officer and security officer in the United States would have one.
Okay, now, I'm glad you said that, because we're an advocate of tasers. We're an instructor here, and we've had a lot of pros and cons. Of course, there are some injuries and there's been some deaths over the years, but they're all related to other things, intoxication, substance abuse, things of that nature, people with bad
right.
hearts. My question for you on the taser, I would rather arm the unarmed, if it's an unarmed post, an unarmed security, I would have them at least have minimally the taser.
Correct.
No, that's not going to stop a bullet, but it is going to stop a lot of different threats and bodily harm that they face.
Correct.
I think the taser is an excellent tool for private security and law enforcement both.
I do too. I think it's great. And, you know, to the people who say the taser is too much juice, it carries too much electricity, it's going to kill people. One thing that we discovered, we had a class up here, and I didn't know it till the class was over. The guy that came in didn't tell us who he was. We assumed he was a security officer, and turned out to be a heart cardiac surgery from Vanderbilt Hospital here in Nashville. And after he went to the class and he sat down and he looked at me, he said, you know, I've got a completely different outlook on the taser now. He said, the defibrillators carry four times more juice than a taser does. So how can a taser kill somebody if a defibrillator with four times more juice is supposed to bring them back? And I said, you're the doctor, you tell me. And he just looked at me and smiled. And, you know, as you said, there's been deaths, but there's been no deaths attributed to the taser. And it's like I told a gentleman up here, and he actually used this and came back and told me it worked. I said, you don't have to fire the taser. Take the cartridge off of it. Do you have a fight breaks out? Just take the cartridge off of it and stand there and spark it, and you'll look like Moses parting the Red Sea because everybody's going to move back. And I said, let them stand there and make the threats. Let them make all the threats they want to about how bad they're going to whip your butt. You need to put that down. I'm not, you know, you put it down and I'm going to whip your butt. Well, there's two things that you got to understand. You're not going to whip my butt because I'm not going to put this down. And don't stand there and argue with them. They're trying to build up their courage, so let them build up their courage and you stay in control. But the taser is the best tool that's ever been out there. You know, when I first started on the department, God, many years ago, I never thought I'd say last century, it was 1970, we had the same controversy out with pepper spray. People were dying, and it turned into basically improper training across the country. And the same thing is happening this day and time with the in-custody death syndrome, that very few security officers even know what we're talking about. And that's one thing that we teach in every class, is that sudden in-custody, how it can happen.
One weapon that was issued equipment to us and I'm sure it was in Metro Nashville back in the good old days, was 10 times more dangerous than the taser, and that's the blackjack.
Oh, yes, yes, we got almighty.
That piece of lead that officers, first of all, were improperly trained, they would split people's heads with, they would smack them in the head, people would die, you know, have brain concussions, so on and so forth. Much, much more dangerous than a taser.
Correct. It's a any type of blood trauma with a baton or anything like that, it's a lot more dangerous. You know, the people that have been injured by the tasers, as you know, 99% of them are injured because when you hit them with it, they fall and they break their arm, they hit their head or something to this effect. But when you're hitting somebody with a stick or pipe or whatever you want to call it, I mean, you're going to get blunt trauma injuries, and there's just no way around it. I mean, that's basically you're hitting them to cause damage and to control, and with a taser, it's just it's an automatic thing there that people have just got to understand. You either, if it escalates to the point where I have to pull a gun and I've got a taser and I'm within the distance to use the taser, you know, this day and time, I would probably resort to the taser unless it turned into a situation where it was more than one and I could control them with a taser, because, you know, with a taser, you're saving lives instead of taking lives. And, you know, one argument that I had with one of the ECLU people up here that we dearly love was, and they had their way about it, we wouldn't have nothing to toothpicks to throw at people. But they didn't understand. And once they saw what we did, and they went through the classes, and we didn't, again, this is something else that didn't happen. We didn't know who they were, but they were the anti-gun people, and I forgot the name of the organization, but once they went through the classes and saw what we were teaching, they came up to us and told us that, you know, we got a different aspect ourselves on what, in what's being done, because we're listening to the news media, which is one of our worst enemies. But it's just a godsend thing to have the tools. And the people have got to get out of their cave and realize that the taser and the other tools are there, and we've got to train these people to defend themselves, because how can they defend the property and the people that's on the property if they can't defend themselves?
Right. One of the, I think, lacking things when it comes to use of force in the security industry is documentation. We have a problem.
Yes.
First of all, overall, security personnel are not good report writers, and neither are police, but police are forced to be because they have many departments now force at least a minimal incident report for almost every call. But explain a little bit about how we should document any level of force that we use and the reason behind it.
Well, one thing that we starting to suggest, now I'm not sure what the laws are in the other states, but in the state of Tennessee, we strongly encourage every security officer and every police officer to do like I did when I worked the streets. I carried a pocket recorder of some type in my pocket. And if time allows, the first thing I'm going to do before I enter a situation, before I stop a car, before I approach anybody, I'm reaching up and clicking the button. So everything that happens is documented, and I can go back and play this thing back, and I can do my reports from there. The documentation is a must to CYA. And if you don't do that, then you're going to wind up in a he said, she said situation, and you're going to lose, because the person that come in their suit and tie that is sitting in there, who may be the deacon at the church, is the one that's filing the complaint against you, is going to be right because you have no evidence to prove he's wrong. And if you don't document the reports in the incident on the reports and do it correctly. We have one company up here whose supervisor, he came to me and said, I want you to read these reports. And I read the reports. I'm going, what's wrong with them? Well, I don't like the way they're written. I said, well, you there when this stuff happened? He says, no. And I said, then you need to listen to what your officers are writing. Well, he said, they're using too much bad language, too many cuss words in it. I said, well, let's read some of them. And we read it, and basically what the officers were doing was exactly what we teach them. You write down exactly what the person said to you. And
exactly.
He said, well, I think that's inappropriate. And he said, he kept saying, I think that's inappropriate. That's wrong. They shouldn't be putting these kind of words in there. I said, well, you got to remember, if you read this to the jury, you want the most impact to the jury that you can get. And those words will have an impact on the jury. And we also tell the officers, if you have a report that may be a detrimental to somebody, maybe even one of your own officers or supervisors, or it may be something that, maybe I want to keep this thing. I mean, make me a copy of this. And I tell them all the time, you know, paperwork never disappears. And it always disappears when there's something comes up where there's a question involved. Make a copy of that report and keep it with you. And we've had companies say, well, you can't do that. That report belongs to the company. Well, I wrote it. It's my writing. It's my document. And I'm writing it and giving the company a copy of my document. So, yes, it is my report as well. And I get to keep a copy of that report. And to give you an example, in 2004, I was recalled to the Davidson County Grand Jury to testify in a appealed case on a rape case that I just happened to drive up on in 1986. And I'm going, thank God for records and thank God for reports. Because when I started getting this, I'm going, oh, my God, I don't remember this. And then when I got the reports and started reading them, everything started clicking back to me. So, yes, and it's, I tell everybody every day, if you're a security officer one day and you work one post, you're in security for the rest of your life, because that incident that happened on that post on that day could come up in 4 to 5 to 6 years down the road in a class action lawsuit. So, yes, you better do reports. You better write them in depth, and you better keep your guesswork out of it. You better keep your comments out of it and write nothing but the facts and what had happened.
Exactly. In a use of force situation, there are three elements to your report that needs to be documented. The first one, of course, is what brought the use of force, what actually escalated to cause you to use the use of force. What level of force was necessary to overcome the force that was coming against you? In other words, you know, if the suspect is using a bat or a club, you have to document that. What did he
right.
hit? What did he threat? What did he say? What caused you to use your taser, your pepper spray, or your firearm? You've got to document
right.
each step along the way, because, like you say, 5 years down the road from now, you're not going to remember, especially
That's
if you're
correct.
Not in the industry anymore and you've moved on to another job, another state. It's another life away, and you don't realize, you know, sometimes we have good memories and sometimes we don't, but it's important to have, if it's not on paper, obviously it didn't happen in most cases.
Correct. That is correct. And the people have just got to understand. I mean, I hated writing reports myself, and it's a job that has got to be done to protect yourself. And once you realize that, I mean, we've got companies and officers that say, well, we're not required to do reports. And I said, well, that's stupid. You need to do something to even prove that you was there. And then we see the reports turned in saying, quiet shift, nothing happening. And that's all that you see in the reports. And I'm going, well, if it's a quiet shift and there was absolutely nothing happening, then why do I need security? You need to write down what you did. You know, I don't care if you went to the bathroom at 7:30 p.m. You write down, went to the bathroom at 7:30 p.m., returned to post at 8:45, or whatever time it was, and what did you do during this whole thing? And if a supervisor can't really understand why, or the supervisor thinks you're making his job too hard, then explain it to him after you don't do a report how hard it's going to be.
Right. We've got a couple of callers. I'm going to take them real quick. Caller, you're on the air. How can we help you tonight?
Hi, this is Tinas. How are you doing? U.S. Patrol Security Services. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing good. How are you doing? Doing good.
Good.
Go ahead and tell us again who you are and kind of introduce yourself so our callers, our audience knows a little bit about you.
Hi. First of all, I want to make sure this is Mike. Am I talking with Mike?
This is Rick, but yeah, I know who you. I got the email today, so I'm familiar with you. You are a instructor, a former law enforcement and corrections officer, and you're in the Dallas area. Is that right?
That's correct. Well, my name is Tinas, and what I do is I run a center here over in Dallas-Fort Worth area. What I do is a use of force instructor. I teach close quarter combat skills, and I'm a chemical agents master instructor. And I'm also a baton master instructor. So what we do is just train in these particular areas of use of force and intermediate force.
What we've been talking about, Tina, in the last little bit here is we're talking tonight about evaluating the various levels of force. There are really three types of threats out there, and you may have another one there, but the three types of threats is imminent threat, obviously the threat that is in your face. They've got a gun, they've got a knife. There's no doubt that you're going to be either injured or killed. There's a perceived threat. That's when officers, either because of the way the person looks or because of the situation, they perceive that there is some level of threat. And there's a probable threat. Sometimes you get called into a situation and there's a likelihood that there's some type of threat. And tonight we're kind of discussing how we can evaluate quickly which level of threat we're facing. Have any suggestions or how can we in the street quickly assess the level of threat that we're facing?
Well, there's a couple of areas that we can look at. The first area that what I do or what I train in is we use an area called MODE, M-O-D-E, and that's an acronym. And what that means is moment of decision engagement. And what that means is that based on the three levels that you're describing, it's a moment of decision based on those three levels on the totality of actually when the officer is going to be able to use force or de-escalate force. That's one area that we train in because any level of force is a moment of decision. It's a moment of decision based on the officer being able to make a decision whether he's going to engage or disengage or escalate or de-escalate. All these different levels are going to be based on that. And the second level, the second area is that once you see that picture, okay, it's going to be based on exactly, an officer to be able to read body language, an officer to be able to see some other type of information that's going to be able to help them to make a good decision or a decision based on engaging or disengaging. Because remember, it does depend on that. I worked the streets for about 15 years, and actually, before I moved to Dallas-Fort Worth, I worked for the Indian City of Milwaukee, and I worked there in nightclubs and bars and things like that. And a lot of those times when I'm in a situation like that, it really helps me to do that because you have to really know just exactly what to do, when to do it. That's trial and error through the years as I'm going through my training, but that's definitely it. You're going to have to be able to read body language. Body language is essential. An officer being able to make decisions or being able to read what a person is doing. A lot of times they don't say anything, it's what they're doing, and being able to make a decision based off those three levels that you just described.
Yeah. What do you think about, and you're right, and I'm sure Buford, you can testify to this, but you have to be able to read body language. You have to be able to read not what the person's saying and not even what they're doing, but what they're not saying and what they're not doing. You have to read their stance. You have to look at their hands. You've got to look at whether they're tensed up, whether they're, you can see steam coming out of their ears. You know that there's a fire within. I saw on your website, Tinas, that you have also something that you teach called deflect. Detect early feeling, learn effective counter tactics. Talk a little bit about that real quick, if you could.
What that basically describes is it's basically understanding, like I said, part of it is the behavioral issue, but also the second part is the knowing without knowing. It's being in a proactive in motion response. What that simply means is a lot of officers, when they're talking to a person, or they're in face or they're talking to the person directly, the deflect system helps them to be able to know without knowing, without trying to get to understand this, without going through a big, huge explanation. I'm just trying to get to the nuts and bolts here. Is the in-motion response is usually based on sucker punch action, ambush action, or these type of issues. All those
right.
All those deals happens with that, and that deflect systems help you to be able to read that, so you'd be able to respond. And in motion means a person usually responds from a 1-1,000 to 1,000 deal. That's usually that 2-second deal. The deflect
right.
system helps you to the deflect system helps you to do the 1-1,000, 1.5-second response, which means you're in motion to be able to read that, to be able to respond to it. Because remember, people don't understand, action is always faster than reaction, but you have to be proactive in order to be able to respond to reactive. That's usually how it works. And that's
right.
Usually what the defense
Buford,
is.
Was there any one thing that you looked at body language-wise or stance-wise that would key you that this is a threat, that it's probably going to be imminent danger? Was there anything that you in particular now as an instructor that you teach your class?
Oh, yeah. The body language to me is one of the key issues. So, you know, a person can stand there and mouth all day long, and the words that they're doing most of the time, we have found that if they're threatening, they're going to take you out or they're going to whip you. That you want to pay attention to what they're saying. You don't want to disregard it. But most of the time when the people are mouthing like that, we found that they're trying to build up their own courage to actually scare you or to actually make themselves do it. But the body language is the number one thing. If you watch their feet, you watch their eyes, if they go into that bladed stance or the boxer stance, they start clenching their fists, their eyes, and their face starts getting flushed and red, and they get that 1,000-yard stare looking right through you, you better get ready to back up because you're fixing to get your butt kicked if you don't do something pretty quick.
And that's that.
You hit the nail on the head, Buford. In fact, I teach a class that targets exactly what you just said. People who are mouthing off, who are aggressively escalating, are doing it not to scare you, but to build themselves up. And they work themselves into a frenzy, and they get their courage up to the point where now they can attack. Those people are the people that you can probably de-escalate. You can probably diffuse if you catch it quick enough. But the people who are quiet, the people who are standing there tensed up, not looking at you, not paying attention, they're not hearing you, those are the real threats. You know, you've heard a thousand times, watch out for the quiet person.
Exactly. The dog that sits on the front porch and just watches you and doesn't do anything till you get close, that's the one you got to watch. It's not the little yapper that's running around the yard, because they're just trying to build their courage up. But it's that old dog who sits on the front porch and just watches you and moves. He doesn't move. He just watches his eyes. His eyes will follow you, and then when you get to the right spot, you're had. And that's the ones you got to watch. It's just that way.
I had a situation.
You are instructor, and you are involved in a couple of different unique type of martial arts, and I'll get into that in a different show because I really like the martial arts myself. But tell us a little bit about, you know, when you're physically conditioned and you have martial art training, you're taught in martial arts to be in a relaxed stage, but to be conscious of your surroundings. Tell us how that could help. Either to be better prepared or to defuse a situation. How do you use martial arts in the threat areas?
Well, you know, we teach a system called penetration, and that's Greek for total skills. And what that boils down to is I see it from a very spiritual aspect, to be honest with you. Every situation, whether it's the threat situation or the threat level situation determines that, because for me, and I've been in a lot of situations where I've been in close quarters dealing with people, it's helping me to understand exactly, because people think, you know, the fight happens, in the restaurants. You know, I've been in very closed areas, you know, like in a doorway. I mean, I've been in places, you know, where it's really not very, you wouldn't see a fight going on in such a thing like that, a bathroom, anything that's close like that. I've been in a couple of situations like that, whether in bars or restaurants. And the thing that I've been able to see is that for me, I see the spiritual aspect of it is that I am beginning to understand more on who I am as a person and what my confidence level is what my abilities are. And I really focus on that. That use of forest area has different levels. And for me, I've been in situations where I've known I've used that and keened in on that, knowing my ability, knowing my confidence level, knowing who I am as a person. knowing my skill level, and just being prepared. Like I was explaining to you about proactiveness, you know, and so you know before you know. And that's usually that's exactly how I'm able to pick that up. It's like a radar detector. You know before you know. And usually I'm in a bladed stance, my hands are up, and I'm usually talking to the person, but I'm able to read the body language intensely and paying attention to what the person's actions are, because I have to be proactive. So I know if that's going to be the case, to be ready. You have to just be ready.
He's exactly 1,000% correct. And one thing I'd like to add to that is also with everything that he also added in there about being prepared is also one of the key things that we teach people. If there's not a thing wrong with knowing when it's time to get the hell out of there.
Right.
You know, just because you got the badge on, you know, that don't stop bullets and don't keep your butt from getting whipped. I don't care who you are. I don't care what kind of skills you got. There's always a time to back up and wait for the John Wayne and the troops to come over the hill. Nothing says you got to get hurt.
That's why we're talking about evaluating the threat, because we have to, especially as private security and civilians, we have to assess quickly whether or not it's time first to call backup or whether or not to proceed forward. You know, and that comes with experience, and that comes in training. Now, as we know, Buford, you know, in law enforcement, especially as a new officer, many officers will go into a call or an incident without proper backup, you know, especially those with 5 years or less experience. They don't really think about what they're getting into. And security officers do the same thing. And that's why we have to better evaluate and size up the situation immediately. And if it takes calling, you know, 911 10 times to get help out there, that's what we got to do. But we also have to be confident in our own skill level, and we've got to be confident in our whether or not we're able to handle the situation.
Correct.
Any other suggestions that you give Buford in the assessment and evaluating the threat training segment?
Well, yeah, basically, everything that we've been talking about falls right into that. One of the biggest things that we used to run across, and I tell you, when I can go back and remember the first car that I stopped, and right out of rookie school, I can remember hearing something. And I'm going, "What is that?" And it was my own heart beating when I was walking up to this car. I was scared to death of the first car stop. And, you know, then after you do it for a while, you know, it don't bother you. You still keep that level of protective up. It is an awareness. But one thing that we used to do when we get one of these youngsters that basically wanted to save the world, we tell them rookies go through the door first. And usually through that door one time first, he realizes real quick, I don't really want to do that no more. Because when you get that out of them real quick, that you know, yes, you can get your butt whipped. I don't care who you are. If you don't evaluate the situation, you don't just I don't care what kind of degrees you got. I don't care what college you went to. I don't really want a partner that can spell good as much as I can. That can recognize the street problems and understand how to handle them. Know how to escalate, how to de-escalate. Know when it's time to back away. Know when it's time to just try to talk to the person or say, "Okay, sir, you can go on your own way," and then wait for backup to get there and take him down. Everything comes back to one simple thing. And I don't care what kind of training you got. I don't care who you get it from or where you go. It's one simple thing. It's called common sense.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, in all of the arrests of security officers this year for use of force issues, it all had to come, it all boiled down to common sense, bad choices, and poor training. You know, even though there were security officers who had adequate training in several states that just made bad decisions, bad common sense. You know, if you're facing a situation that's too much for you to handle, there's no problem with you backing off and calling for backup and getting the heck out of there until question. To escalate a situation or a threat is only going to get yourself in trouble, possibly arrested, and definitely sued. And that's why we're talking about evaluating the threat, because, you know, it's a situation where we have little time to make a decision, and if you have poor decision-making skills, this probably isn't the type of job that you should be in.
But people don't understand also that, you know, when you're in a police academy, you know, I've been involved in every defensive tactics program that's been available, and police departments and being in the academy, and that was at several departments. But, you know, mostly in academies, they don't teach police officers who they are as a person either.
So
as a person, police officers are people. They have fears. And the thing about it is that they're not addressing who they are as a person. So when they're encountering situations, they're encountering themselves and their fears. They're encountering what they're dealing with. But the problem is, I'm in a situation now. I have to know how to deal with it in a split second. You know, a lot of times, you know, that decision right there is based everything on who the person is. Because if I have a fear of dealing with people, if I have a fear of facing a threat, sometimes police officers make bad decisions. I know a lot of police officers in a certain city that I know that I worked in, a lot of police officers had what's called use of force problems, or they overextended the force, they used too much force. A lot of officers that I know that got fired or other things happened to police officers because most of that, all of those excessive force issues all boils down to personal fears. And when they encountered it on the street, they weren't dealt with in the academy. They weren't dealt with before the person got hired. They weren't dealt with in those issues. So now they're out on the street dealing with people. And then they're facing that.
Yeah, you're absolutely
right. The problem right now is that, you know, the FBI statistics that was recently released said that crime is going down in every area. Violent crime is down across the nation. I don't see it personally, and I don't really believe it.
No, it's not. It's, you know, I worked in a city, you know, crime statistics. I'm not saying that challenging statistics. I'm just saying people and experiences when you're working in the field and you're dealing with problems, robberies, armed robberies, you're dealing with threat level situations on a continual regular basis, then there's armed robberies every single day. You know, you kind of highly doubt that the crime is going down. The problem is, even the crime is going down, how you deal with the crime that is going down? I mean, I'm talking about the people who are dealing with it. You know, the security officer.
I don't think the crime is going down, and definitely not violent crime, but the numbers obviously are not showing it. Buford, correct me if I'm wrong, but in your 30 years, you were never shot in the line of duty. Is that right?
Yes and no. I had a ricochet, but it wasn't a direct hit.
Now, my reason for asking, you were faced with many armed suspects. I can recall a case that you were on some time ago in Nashville. You were faced with many armed suspects, but how did you choose the level of force? How did you decide, okay, this is a lethal threat, or I can de-escalate it? I can get them to surrender peacefully. What tactics did you use? Was it a verbal command? Was it some other use of force level? What did you do? Because I know that you had a lot of armed situations in your many years on the force.
Well, you basically, again, it comes back to the simple thing of common sense. You know, we went into situations in the tactical division that I was assigned to for 24 years.
We never walked into a situation by ourselves. We always had at least 1 to 2 to 3, 4 people there, because we did not travel like the regular patrol officers did. But you evaluate, and the voice commands are the number one thing. You let them know right off the bat, we're here, and we are in charge. And if you want to challenge that, then we had to have a plan in place about what we were going to do if somebody wanted to challenge it. We didn't have tasers. We had sticks and pepper spray. Sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't. And then we had to fire them. And then basically the old fence thing. But, you know, we didn't take us long to quit using the pepper spray, because we found out that when you spray one, you got to fight him now. And then you wind up with more of an onion than you did then. But basically, it's just like we've been talking. It's the common sense aspect of watching the subject, picking up on the keys, getting your body position, knowing how to, you know, we already had plans when we went into a situation, and if you were standing there, we separated and we kept you guessing which one of us is fixing to take you out or take you down, and the one that you thought was fixing to do it wasn't the one that did it. So you got to keep everybody guessing and make them understand that you're in control. And don't be afraid to do what you have to do. I mean, that's where people make them second guess everything. You second guess it after it's over, not while it's happening.
That's exactly right.
Now,
I have a.
Go ahead, Tina.
I'm sorry. I agree with him 100% on that. I agree with you on that. I've dealt with situations across the board. I've used use of force in all of the levels except been in a couple been in two shooting situations in my career. I've had most of my use of force has been the lowest level of force, and we use a chemical agent, a pepper spray that we use, and I've sprayed a lot of people. But I can tell you. From my personal experience in spraying people and dealing with incidents, I've de-escalated a lot of situations using the lowest level of force.
Right.
And, what we do is, as a chemical agent's master instructor, what I do is I'm a researcher in all chemical agent products and what they do to the body on the physiological response level. So we have to figure out what one works and what one doesn't in different situations. Now, all pepper sprays work, but they work differently. So we got to be able to find out what one works. And we carry a product that's used by Fox Labs. And Fox Labs makes the best pepper sprays in the world today. I've used Fox Labs for 5 years, and I've sprayed guys that were EDP on drugs. I've sprayed people that was armed. I've done a lot of different things with those sprays. It's just incredible.
I'm actually familiar with Fox Labs, and I understand that is a good product. I have not used it, but, you know, as private security officers are getting more involved, and I'm going to wrap this up in a few minutes, guys, because I know you have other things to do, but, you know, as more security officers are getting involved in proactive duty, security officers basically, especially now with the number of law enforcement agencies understaffed, security officers are really the first responder. And 9 times out of 10, when an incident happens, the security officer is going to be the first one there if that property has security at all. And so getting involved with all types of incidents, everything from burglaries in progress, domestic fights, shoplifting, assaults, security is going to get more and more involved in and the use of force. Is there anything that we can do besides, of course, extended training, which should be done? Is there anything that we can do as an industry, as a security industry, that we can do to better prepare security personnel for the threat that is obviously out there and obviously only going to intensify in the upcoming years? Buford, I'll let you speak first.
Well, one of the first things we have to do is we got to educate the public that the security officer is. We had one company here in Nashville that took one at one of the local motels, And they had the security officer delivering towels, working on air conditioners and everything else. And then the lady got attacked in the parking lot, and the lawsuit came about because he was not doing his job, not where he's supposed to be. And, you know, you got to go back and say, okay, the public, we have got to make you realize that if you hire security, they're not there to deliver towels. They're not there to you know, pick up trash in the parking lot or whatever you want them to do. They're there for one reason. That's security. So the public has got to be educated as why, because they just want that body or that uniform there as a deterrent. I have no problem with them being a deterrent, but they've also got to be proactive and realize that if they're going to be a deterrent, they're going to have to be the deterrent at the parking lot, be seen, be aggressive, and do what they've got to do. Now, the second part to this is the companies are going to have to be educated, and the companies are going to have to quit going out here and fighting with each other, and they're going to have to get together, and they're going to have to put this all in one big pot and stir it up, and everybody comes out with the same attitude. We got to do something. We got to, you know, pay our guys good, and we've got to keep going with this program so that everybody understands that the safety of our officers is the most important. Then the third thing is the security officers. You know, if a security officer, you know, we had a company, I'm not going to call any company's name, but I can tell you it was done in the Memphis area of Tennessee, and state contract at one of the local state facilities down there was awarded at $7.85 an hour. Now, you know what the guards have got to be making. And,
wow.
You know, somebody, I mean, if a guard would go to work, a security officer out there, if he goes to work and he's making $7.5, $8 an hour or less, you know, I can flip hamburgers at a local restaurant and make more than that. And
exactly. I was just going to say, I can work at Burger King for $9 an hour right now.
And
Jesus,
I mean, if a person takes a job at that, then, you know, there's an ego problem there, and the companies need to look at that. But, you know, this, the education of the public, the companies, and the security officers, and like I said earlier, if the companies are acting illegal, the guards need to report them. They need to report them to somebody and stop this crap before it escalates and people get killed.
Exactly. Tina, what do you think we can do to help the private security industry, because obviously as more companies use private security and there's a less law enforcement available because of budgets and so forth, and obviously more of a risk factor for security, what do you think that they can do to be better prepared for the confrontations and the use of force issues that they're about to face?
Well, as I said before, there's two, and I have to agree, and I want to be able to add with the gentleman that spoke. I agree with him 100% on what he said. I'm a big believer that security officers and people need to be taught security. To be completely honest with you, from a biblical level, what I mean by that is officers need to understand wisdom. Wisdom is the most important thing in insight. They need wisdom. Wisdom in knowing how to make decisions, wisdom in being able to understand how to make decisions, and thirdly, they need to be able to know how to be able to react and respond, obviously, with this type of physical training that I was describing earlier. With wisdom, we make better decisions. I mean, common sense is a part of it, but they need to have insight. They need to be very prudent, and prudence is a key element in making decisions. And that wisdom is really important to private security for, you know, officers from all different levels, whether they're armed or unarmed. And the second thing that I want to talk about is, even as a lot of private security officers don't carry firearms today, it would almost make sense for them to be able to arm their officers as much as they possibly can in reference to the tools that they'll be able to use, whether they, you know, even though they're not carrying firearms, they need to be carrying the most available practical technology that the officers could be able to use. More technology training. What I mean by that is being able to, you know, officers today need just a little bit more technology training, a little bit more, learning how to be able to use computers and other things that are available to them, other tools, you know, technology that's going to be able to help them do their job. Because, you know, firearms and everything else, like I said before, a lot of them don't have them. Some do, some don't. I wish all you know, private security personnel can be armed, but they don't. Obviously, insurance and liability has a lot to do with that, and the client also. But I just think that other resources, training, you know, type of resources, you know, technology would be a second thing. So, you know, I'm a real person on those two key elements, and even if the officers aren't armed, they'll have a lot more available to them.
Okay. I agree with that. We're going to wrap up this segment. Before we go, Tina, why don't you tell us again how they can reach you if they'd like to get in touch with you for any type of training. If you want to give your phone number, your web address, go ahead and do it.
My phone number is 262-227-6202. That's area code 262-227-6202. And my email address is TEANISJR, Tinas Jr. at sbcglobal.net. That's my email address. And my website is www.uspatrolandandsecurity.com, all one word, uspatrolandsecurity.com.
And you're in the Plano, Texas, which is just outside of Dallas area, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
We have available.
We're gonna make your information available on our website in a new training page that's being created right now. So we will refer people in your area to you for the various training that you do. I appreciate you calling in, and we'll be in touch with you because we're going to be networking with a number of training centers. So we'll have you back on the show as well. Okay. I appreciate you calling in tonight.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you for having me on the show.
Thank you. Have a good night. Buford?
Sir.
Okay. You can do the same thing. I highly recommend if you're in Tennessee or Alabama, Georgia, or any place in that neck of woods that you go to Buford Toon School in Nashville, go ahead and give your website address and any information that you want people to have so that they can look you up.
Okay, sir. Our contact phone number is area 615-360-6002, 615-360-6002. My email address is appstraining, and that's APPS training, all one word, at bellsouth.net. The website is www.appstraining.com. It's APPStraining.com. Something else that we do, and we do quite a bit of, is we have a lot of clients and so forth where we do a lot of expert witness testimony, use of force and security matters. Basically, what I tell the security officers is, you know, we testify to what the evidence is given to us, not what you want us to testify to, but what the evidence presents, and we testify based upon your actions, and your actions has a big influence on the type of testimony that we're going to be given. We have an excess of expert witnesses in just about every area that we travel. We've been all over the United States, testified in over 35 states as expert witnesses in security matters and use of force.
I'd love to use you personally, but I can't afford your per second charges. But are you going to be teaching down in Alabama at all, or have you decided what you're going to do with that?
Yeah, more than likely we'll present it and see what comes up. We, like I said, we've been to Alabama once and did some training down there. You know, we do a lot of traveling as well. It depends on what the people want. A lot of the classes we do are not really per se certification classes, but more knowledgeable classes like advanced handgun, advanced shotgun, baton spray type stuff. And you know, we have to be careful too, because you know, you get into certain areas, you got to know what the laws are, and in certain states you
right.
can't even carry pepper spray, and then you have to be real careful, because you really can cause some enemies and go into some of these areas, and some of the instructors in there don't particularly like you because you come into their area. So we have to kind of play it by ear, and if we get a company that wants us to come into any part of the country and teach, as long as there's enough people there to, you know, we try to keep the price down as low as we can, because we know what security officers make, but we can travel anywhere for them.
Okay. We have a couple of things that I'll send you an email. I'll talk to you off the air about, but I got a couple of things that we can work together on. I appreciate your time. I'm glad that you were willing to come on air, and I hope that our listeners, which we have many around the U.S. and around the world, actually, has been able to take something away from this, and I really appreciate you doing this for us, Buford.
No problem. Glad to do it.
I'll be talking with you later this week. Have a good night, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you. There are a number of threat levels, and unfortunately, not a lot of time to make a decision. You are in the midst of an apartment complex at 2 o'clock in the morning when you observe a suspicious vehicle. What makes that vehicle suspicious? What makes it any different than a vehicle next to it parked on either side? You have to, in your mind, know what about that vehicle is making it suspicious. You investigate. The driver is obnoxious. He's rude. His conduct is disorderly. He's not listening to your commands. He's not following your instructions. You have seconds, literally split seconds, to decide if this is a situation that you want to be involved in before you call for backup. Most security officers work alone. We don't have the luxury of a Metro Police Department. We don't have 15 officers in our area. Call. However, we do have police and sheriff's departments in all jurisdictions across this country and hopefully around the world, wherever you might be, that will, because it's their job, they're required, if nothing else, they will respond to your call, whether it be immediate or whether it be slower than you would like. All depends on how you communicate the threat, the urgency, to the 911 operator. If you're involved in a situation, let's say, in the middle of an apartment complex with a disorderly suspect who is not cooperative, you have to decide at that moment, if you're alone especially, if you should back off or if you should engage this person. There are three things to consider right then and there. Number one, has a crime been committed? If no crime has been committed, and you're merely trying to find out if, one, he's a resident, two, what he's doing on the property, and three, what he's up to, you might want to back away and call for help before you escalate the situation. Just in the last week, an accident, a very minor accident in the parking lot of an apartment complex in Houston, Texas, escalated to a shooting. Who was at fault? I don't want to Monday morning quarterback. I wasn't there on the scene. I don't know. But here we have a driver who caused minor damage to a vehicle. The security officer confronts him. The security officer is armed. He escalates the problem further. Shots are fired. The driver of the vehicle is killed. The security officer is in jail for murder, second-degree murder. Why? Was this necessary use of force? Was it, as Tinas mentioned earlier, was it prudent? You see, besides
knowing the level of threat, you have to be justified, you have to be prudent in your decision. What does that mean? You have to be certain, absolutely certain, that you are doing what any other person, reasonable person, would do. You are using the level of force that any reasonable officer would use in this same situation. You can't justify the use of force, any level of force, just by saying, I was afraid. I was scared. I thought he was going to hurt me. I thought he had a gun. I thought he said he was going to shoot me. That's not going to fly in court. It's not going to fly with the judge. It's certainly not going to fly with the jury. Many times, people will make this statement. I've made it myself. I'd rather be judged by 12 than carried by 6. Well, sometimes we say that without realizing the consequences behind that. Any armed person can use force, but whether or not it's prudent, whether or not it's necessary, and whether or not it's lawful, it's a different story. When you are faced with a conflict, when you are faced with some level of threat, you have to decide, one, has a crime been committed? Am I just checking this person out because he's suspicious? You have to determine, has there been implied threat? Is there imminent threat, imminent danger? Or is there just probable threat? Can you flee? The law actually looks at security officers as private civilians. And we do not, in most cases, have to put ourselves in jeopardy. We don't have to commit ourselves to the use of force in many cases. We can back down. We can de-escalate that situation until the cavalry arrives. In many situations, not in all situations, not in every situation, but in many situations. So when you are confronting someone, first, you have to realize one of three types of threats must be there before you can decide what level of force to use. Imminent threat. Someone is pointing a gun. Someone is armed with a weapon, a knife. Danger is imminent. That means immediate. Now, he has some weapon. And even if you try to run, even if you try to flee, he could shoot you. He could stab you. Danger, threat is imminent. So you have no choice but to use force, lethal, which is deadly, or non-lethal. Number two, perceived threat. You know, we can all perceive threat. As Buford Toon, the 30-year Metro National Police career officer, said, any situation can be perceived threat, but that doesn't mean there is threat. Perceived is because of a person's body language, because of the environment that we may be in. If we're in the middle of a hood of a Section 8 housing project and there's a lot of mean-looking people, or we're in the middle of a nightclub, people drinking, we've had experience there before where people are armed, sure, that could be perceived threat. We don't see anyone with a gun. We don't see anyone threatening us. We have not been threatened, but we perceive it. In that situation, no use of force can be applied whatsoever, but we have to be prepared. We have to be ready. We have to be alert. We have to be responsive. Case threat becomes from perceived to imminent. And the last level of threat that we face is probable threat. Probable threat. We get called to a domestic violence at a hotel room. We know that there's been violence, there's been an assault. That's a probable threat. The male or the female is not going to be too happy to see us, whether we're police or security, showing up at their door. So we can believe that there is probable threat. Whether or not that escalates to the next step of perceived or imminent threat, we don't know. But we have to be alert to it because we have now reason to believe that there is probable threat. The same way when we respond to a crime in progress. We're a mall security officer. We are responding to a department store with a shoplifting in progress or with shoplifters who have just fled the store. I dare a judge to tell me that in that case there is no probable threat. Anytime that you're going to attempt to arrest, detain, or apprehend a person for a crime that they've committed, there's going to be some level of threat. In my 35 years in this business, I have made hundreds of arrests. I don't remember one person, not one, who sat there quietly and said, "Oh, I'm so glad you're going to arrest me. Here, put the handcuffs on me." Not one. So surely in that situation, there is a probable threat and possibly even a perceived threat depending on the persons that you're attempting to detain, arrest, or apprehend. You have to know when to use force. Imminent threat, remember what that means, because that is the most deadliest of threat. That is, you must use force immediately, probably deadly force. There is perceived threat. You think that there's a threat because of the way the man looks, because of the environment you're in. And there is probable threat. You have responded to a crime, a situation. There's a level of probability that you could be injured, hurt, or the fight could ensue. That's probable. Know the laws in your state. Study the laws. I'm telling you now, this is the best advice I can give you. If you're in the state of Tennessee, Georgia, Kansas, California, know your statutes. Know what a felony is. Know what a misdemeanor is. Know what aggravated assault is. Know what it means under the law to commit an assault. The more information, the more knowledge, the more training that you have, the better you're going to be prepared, the better you're going to be able to do your job, and the more absolute sound arrest, sound use of force you're going to have. Tonight, I'm telling you now, 71 security officers arrested this year, more than 15 for aggravated assault, 6 for murder. Whether or not they should have or shouldn't have used force, it's not for us to say. But if you're going to use force, know when and know the levels. That's going to wrap up tonight's show. I hope that you've enjoyed it. I hope that you're able to take something from this and use it in your everyday career. Remember, you can listen to our news roundup every morning right here in the Private Officer Talk Radio.
If you're not an association member, you need to be. Go to www.privateofficer.com and join today. Thank you to my guest, Buford Toon, a 30-year career veteran of the police department in Nashville, and Tina Tillman, a professional security instructor. We're glad that you were on the show with us. It was better because you were. Thank you for listening tonight. Be safe, be blessed, and I'll talk to you personally right here on the radio the next time. Have a good night.